Hey everybody, I'm Garrett.
And I'm Melissa.
We've been married for 8 years and have two kids, Caleb and Sadie.
Over the last few years, we have fallen in love with the scriptures and are learning how digging into God's word has helped us grow deeper with each other and those around us.
We want to be real about our lives, our struggles, and our joys.
This is Growing Deeper. We're finally back. We're back and we're in a new location, and for the first time in podcast history, in our podcast history, Garrett and I are actually face to face and not sitting just next to each other.
In our bed. Yeah. Where our knees, like, we would always get to the end of a podcast and our knees would be creaking and hurting so really bad. Like, you would hear the groans as we would get out of the bed following every podcast, especially the ones where I tended to go on and on too long.
Yeah, I'd be, like, rolling around, like, quietly move my legs because my knees were in so much pain. Anyways, so we're trying something new and trying to record a podcast in Garrett's office because he has a more official office space in our new house. So we're going to give it a go. But enough about our move. We are enjoying our new house.
Getting it all in order and doing all the things and putting things in place. Very much like God establishing his tabernacle or creation as he orders the world.
What a transition.
That's exactly what we're doing, yeah.
Wow.
I had seven speeches and all of the furniture started performing its function.
You should have seen his turban he was wearing.
Anyways, so
before we jump in to, let's see, chapter 28 today, we're going to do another round of kids' table topic roulette. So Garrett, you
provided by Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A kids meal.
Yeah, so if you get a Chick-fil-A kids meal, this came with it. And we got a couple of them. They're all
What's funny is I was like, Garrett, this would be a great idea to, like, you know, at dinner time, that's what this is for, like, to talk to your kids about things. And not once have we done this with the kids. We've only done it on the podcast.
Right. We have conversations with our kids, though. So
yeah, but they're not roulette.
No, we do not play roulette with them. Okay, just to be clear, I'm drawing this. Is this your question or is this my question?
This question is for you to answer.
Do you prefer playing inside or outside?
Oh, this is easy.
What do you think I'm going to say?
Playing inside or outside?
Yeah, what do you think I would say?
Outside.
For sure. I like playing outside better. As a kid, I grew up just like wanting to stay inside all the time and playing video games or whatever. I remember you know, just playing like N64 and stuff and like wanting to do that all the time. And a friend of mine always wanted to be outside. And so we would hang out all the time. And, you know, basically, and this probably happens with most friends, like after the fourth day of like spending the night with each other over the summer,
you hate them.
You hate each other. Like third day, like everything was fine. It was like, oh, can Container stay over again? You know, and like, yeah, he can stay over. And then by the next morning, we want to kill each other.
Yeah.
And then you spend one day apart, and then you're back together again. And you're like, I love you.
I can't believe you name dropped there.
Oh well, Tanner doesn't listen to this, I'm sure. But anyway, I just remember like me and him would hang out all the time, and we would be like just hate each other. After three or four days, we'd spend a day apart, and then we were totally good for three or four more days. And but anyways, he would always want to be outside. I'd want to be inside. And now I've totally transitioned to, if I can do and play things outside, that's where I want to be. And
All right, I'm nervous because I wish I had that question, because that was pretty easy. Oh, geez. If you designed a treehouse, what would it look like?
Oh, actually,
I do have an idea for this. I recently, in our area, or close to our area, there's like a new dome treehouse, like place you can rent out and like a family getaway kind of thing. Well, it could be a couple's getaway, or they have bigger ones that could be for families. But I love, like, it just seems really neat. So I would just put
so you would want dome. You would want a luxurious.
Oh, for sure. House. Oh, for sure. I mean, you know.
Like, not have, like
a toilet.
This wasn't a treehouse, but I just imagine like the He-Man Woman Haters Club that from Little Rascals.
It also helps that Caleb was watching George of the Jungle tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And his treehouse is pretty legit. He's got, like, an elevator in it. Well, I say elevator. It, like, you know, it's like a rope elevator you can kind of just go down.
What do they call those? I forget what they're called.
But I would say a dome-shaped thing would be pretty cool, although I'm not sure how that would work elevated that high. Or if you haven't seen George of the Jungle, just Google his treehouse and maybe something.
Pete the Cat had a bowling alley in his.
True.
Yeah. And he also had a lot.
It didn't seem like it would last in storm.
Right. For sure.
But, I mean, we've just been talking a lot recently about how bad both of us are at, like, design stuff. Yeah. Like interior design, because obviously
Garrett's
a design engineer, so he better be somewhat good at
general design. But I'm more of physical fit and will something go in a particular place and will it work?
So this is, but as far as like, you know, making something look nice, we're not the best at that. I would say like the dome kind of look.
Okay.
Would be fun.
All right.
All right.
Well, let's we'll transition into Exodus chapter 28. Just to recap before, you know, we've been going through the establishment of the tabernacle and how God is laying out his house. It's his dwelling on earth where he can dwell among his people. It's the heaven on earth overlap. It's the place where it's this new Eden that's being set up in and among Israel. And in the last section, we largely went through a lot of the courtyard, the altar, the altar of the burnt offering, or where you would have the ascension offerings, and all your other offerings as well that would be brought there, and then the courtyard. And then it ended. It was really odd. It ended the last section, going back, kind of zooming back into the middle of the tabernacle, into the holy place where the lampstands are, and talking about that Aaron and his sons would be continually keeping the lamps going. And one thing I did not mention last time was that this is the first time, it's in chapter 27, verse 21, is the very first time the tabernacle is called the tent of meeting or tent of assembly. It transitions from being, you know, God's dwelling. It is God's dwelling, but then the name changes to it being the tent of meeting. And it'll go in between these two things as you go throughout the narrative. But here it specifically transitions to the tent of meeting for the first time, and then it brings up Aaron and his sons. And so the question is, you know, well, it's the tent of meeting. Who's he going to meet? Right? And so, like, I think that's why the authors kind of put it, like, wedged it in there, this little thing about the lamps, to introduce Aaron and his sons, because that's going to transition into the priest section of this establishment. It's not just God's house, it's also the place where he's going to meet with Israel, and who are those people going to be? And so that's primarily what this section is going to be about, is starting to introduce the priests, and it's not really going to tell you their roles, but we're going to get a sense of what these things mean as we go through this description of here's what the priests are going to look like, here's what the high priest is going to look like. So we're going to start off and kick off chapter 28 here in verse 1. So go ahead, Melissa.
Have Aaron, your brother, brought to you from among the Israelites, along with his sons Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar, so they may serve me as priests. Make sacred garments for your brother Aaron to give him dignity and honor. Tell all the skilled men to whom I have given wisdom in such matters that they are to make garments for Aaron, for his consecration, so he may serve me as a priest. These are the garments they are to make: a breastpiece, an ephod, a robe, a woven tunic, a turban, and a sash. They are to make these sacred garments for your brother Aaron and his sons, so they may serve me as priests. Have them use gold and blue and purple and scarlet yarn and fine linen. Make the ephod of gold and of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and of finely twisted linen, the work of a skilled craftsman. It is to have two shoulder pieces attached to two of its corners so it can be fastened. Its skillfully woven waistband is to be like it. of one piece with the ephod and made with gold and with blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and with finely twisted linen. Take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel and the order of their birth, six names on one stone and the remaining six on the other. Engrave the names of the sons of Israel on two stones the way a gem cutter engraves the seal. Then mount the stones in gold filigree settings and fasten them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as a memorial stone, as memorial stones for the sons of Israel. Aaron is to bear the names on his shoulders as a memorial before the Lord. Make gold filigree settings and two braided chains of pure gold like a rope and attach the chains to the settings.
Okay, so we have the section open up. It's the, okay, it's the tent of meeting, who we're going to meet, and we're introduced to the characters that are going to be the ones that God is meeting with, and then kind of what their role is. And for this, it's Aaron. We know Aaron. We've heard of Aaron. Aaron's been around. He's been around since, what, like Exodus 3 or 4, mm-hmm. whenever, you know, Moses, he's given this opportunity where God says, hey, go before Pharaoh. And he's like, how about you send somebody else? He has five rejections to it, to where the fifth one is basically just like, you just need to find somebody else to do this. And it says that in that moment that God, that's like the first time God burns with anger, in the Bible. And he burns with anger but then he comes up with a solution to the matter of how do I get Moses, you know, how do we get Moses rolling here? And he says, look, what about your brother Aaron? You know, he's on his way. He can speak for you, whatever, to the Israelites. And so Aaron was introduced there because of Moses's, you know, his resistance to the job he was being given. And so what Aaron is doing, he's going to speak to the Israelites and to Pharaoh on behalf of Moses. He's going to be this in-between. He's going to keep being that. And he's being given an opportunity to be this priest. And primarily with priests, I think when we think of priests, we probably go to maybe what we have thought of as like Catholic priests, yeah. or whatever, or, you know, like they're just kind of ministers, I guess, or like, I don't know, they're clergy. I mean, and they're not, not that. But this has a very distinct role in the cult here, as to what they're going to perform, what they're going to do. And priests serve as an in-between. They're a go-between between Yahweh and the people. And Aaron and his sons are going to stand in the gap. They're going to be the ones that represent both the people to Yahweh as well as Yahweh to the people. He's going to be the one that stands in the middle. And so we know Aaron, he's going to be that. And then we know Nadab and Abihu, they've been introduced to this before. But I think this is the first time Eleazar and Ithamar have been introduced as the rest of his sons. Now, Nadab and Abihu, they're going to play a special role in Leviticus that's not so good. Basically, the first day that they get to be priests, they go in, they do something they're not supposed to, and they die. And so it's not a great introduction to the priesthood. Basically, right out the gate, the Levites are failing at the job that they've been given. But anyways, that's not known at this point yet. I mean, there's been some hints along the way, but right now, everything is going as it should be. And God is going to set them up as the priests. What things come up to you in this section that stick out that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I mean, to me, and you kind of touched on this, but it kind of felt like Aaron is finally coming up again. Like there was a mm-hmm. while in you know, in the story where it was just like, oh yeah, Aaron is still there with Moses, because it seemed like Moses like grew in confidence mm-hmm. with his abilities and really leaned into, you know, God and trusting in what he was telling him and everything. And so it kind of felt like Aaron took a back seat. So when I got to this point in this chapter, I was a little surprised that Moses wasn't going to be involved in this. Mm-hmm. But then like you were talking about, well, it's like if we go back to the very beginning of this story, it's, you know, he didn't want this role ultimately, and God was not happy with him at that point. So this is kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of one of those weird things where I think initially probably Moses would have.
Yeah, I think Aaron is a concession on God's half. You know, it's like he wanted to work with Moses, but he was only going to be able to work with Moses as much as Moses wanted to work with him, and so Aaron is a concession. And you do get the feeling that Moses is supposed to be in this place, but actually in the narrative, Moses is in this place. Like he's actually the one that's in the holy of holies right now at the top of the mountain. Sometimes whenever we get into these long drawn out descriptions, again we forget where we are.
Yeah,
he's getting this description on the top of the mountain, which is what the Holy of Holies is going to represent.
Yeah,
and so Moses is kind of doing that job, even though he was so resistant to it before.
Yeah, but it's almost like now he's about to get to take a step back.
Yeah,
and
so, or have an or maybe one way to look at it is that he's going to have an opportunity to kind of place this mantle on somebody else.
Yeah.
That not only him, but he's going to be able to put this mantle on his brother Aaron. And that's what all of this is kind of like symbolizing. All this stuff, this is all the garments. This whole section is the garments of the priest. That he's going to be able to, he's basically getting these plans on like, this is Aaron's costume, basically. He's going to be suited up in this. And he's going to represent Israel with this. And we'll get into that, but he's getting these plans for Aaron. It's almost like he's being given a gift to go give his brother. And that is like, I guess you just kind of, you feel like he's going to, at the end of this, run down the mountain and be like, Aaron, guess what? Look at what you get to do. This is what you're going to get to be. And so let's just kind of hang on to that, like, excitement or whatever that he would have kind of coming down the mountain and see what happens. You know, let the narrative play out. But right now it's like Aaron's being given and, he's being put in a place of opportunity of a lifetime, that he's going to be able to wear these special garments. And so it says, make holy garments for Aaron. This, again, these are garments. They have no moral qualities. They're set apart for a purpose, which is what being holy means. It's not necessarily moral in and of itself. It's something that is like, it's dedicated to service to Yahweh. So, these garments aren't just any garments. They're garments dedicated to the service of Yahweh. And it says that they'll be for glory and for splendor. And it's really interesting. The word glory, it's the Hebrew word kavod. In every other instance in this book, the word kavod is tied and attributed to Yahweh. Only here does it, only in this chapter does it get tied to a person that is Aaron. And so in some way, it's like that Aaron is going to be imbued with the glory of God. And so biblical scholars go through this and they say, it's really interesting of that we've talked a lot about how the tabernacle it's this return to Eden. Mm-hmm. This return to Eden and how everything is kind of, God is establishing this new creation. It's a small microcosm of all of the creation. And now you have a person that's being imbued with glory that is only usually attributed to God. He's being given glory. And one thing with this, this is from David Peterson, a book I just finished called Possessed by God, which means owned by God. But he says, in the Second Temple time, he says, it was believed that Adam and Eve were created in the image and likeness of God, that they shared of God's glory, but lost what they had because they rebelled against him. Hence Paul's declaration, this is later, Paul's declaration that all have sinned and lack the glory of God. Judaism expected that the elect would inherit all the glory of Adam in the new age, experiencing the glory of God in such a way that they would be transformed by it. And the reason I bring that up is that there's this hope that somehow that the glory that was meant for Adam, that at some point somebody's going to take that back up. And here we have a person that's being imbued with the glory. And it's like Aaron's being presented, and the priests are being presented as this new Adam that's able to traverse and go in to Eden. They're able to pass by the cherubim. Mm-hmm. Since Genesis chapter 3, we've never been, they haven't been able to pass by the cherubim. And now you've got the cherubim all over the tabernacle. These are the guys. Yeah. They're going to get to do it. They're going to be the new Adam.
I think going along with that, you know, there was a podcast a few weeks. It's probably been a month or two now. I don't know. Where I had asked, like, does this make God, there was something that happened that, you know, does this make God seem arrogant? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like the, something that was kind of hard to grapple with of just like the, I don't know, the idea that we are just like, we're going to worship him for eternity type thing. And does that make him just like an all about me God? Mm-hmm. And, I was really excited to see this part here. Like, In the midst of like one of the sections that's just really like, honestly, it's hard to read some of this. You know, it's like me and Garrett were talking about how much we can't wait to get back more into like the narrative and not necessarily just talking about garments.
Instructions on how to make garments. Yeah, or yeah. Like tabernacle.
Reading a handbook, you right. know. But something that I think is really helpful here is that there is this elevation of Aaron, of the priests, and like to me, someone who is arrogant would not be trying to lift others up.
Right.
And that's what's happening here, is that there's this lifting of others up so that, yes, so that they can be in his presence, but like he equally wants that. Yeah. So, I mean, it's more of like this relationship of, and I'm thinking too of the word, we've talked about the word justice some, of how that's like not necessarily laying the hammer down on people who have done wrong, but elevating those who are lesser than or can't right. help themselves or whatever. And so like I can just really see all that character of God in this section, even though we're talking about, you know, things that you wouldn't necessarily go, oh yeah, the section where we're talking about the priestly garments, that's where I really saw how God is like one who elevates mankind.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what I see here.
Yeah, it's a theme. You think back to, okay, so Tower of Babel, probably a more overlooked story for us, but Tower of Babel, they're about elevating their name. They just say, mm-hmm. let's make a name for ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, then the very next chapter, God, after he scatters everybody, he chooses one, right, which is Abraham or Abram. And he says, I will make a name for you, right? And he's going to elevate this humble man named Father that's childless.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then, like, you look at Hannah's song about, like, how God, he takes the, you know, the oppressed and he lifts them up and he, you know, seats them. Like one of the Psalms is about, you know, seating the oppressed on thrones like princes kind of thing. Or look at Mary's song. Mary's song is all about like, you've seen me and, you know, you take the humble and you lift them up and the proud you bring down.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, this is very much in the character of Yahweh that he wants to give glory to these people that are humble. And it's very much in his character that he wants to take them and seat them. That's in the character of Jesus himself. Like he takes this humble king, you know, or, you know, like the one that, chooses to love his enemies, puts himself last. That's the one he chooses to elevate, right? Mm-hmm. That's the one that he says, sit at my right hand so that I can make your enemies, your footstool. But it's just very much in his character that he elevates the humble and brings down the proud. And it's not like a, yeah, I mean, he just has this desire to imbue glory on others. It's not, yeah, kind of helps with that. Maybe the arrogant feel sometimes about glory,
mm-hmm.
Which glory mainly means weightiness, giving weight to something, yeah. And importance to something. Another thing, this word splendor or beauty, what it, you said, I can't remember what you said.
What verse are you talking about?
This is verse 2. It'll be for glory and for splendor.
Mine says dignity and honor.
Okay. That word, your word honor, my word splendor, in mine, it says glory and splendor for mine. In other translations, it'll say beauty. It's the very first time in scripture that's ever occurred. That word for beauty or splendor or honor. And it's imbued on Aaron. It'll sometimes it'll be like attributed to flowers, like what flowers have, they're clothed with splendor. Or what God is clothed with. The thing that clothes God is the thing that clothes him. So just really interesting. So they're going to have these things crafted for them by skilled craftsmen. And again, this goes back to the way that the Holy of Holies was made, skilled craftsmen as opposed to an embroiderer. But this outer garment, he's going to have a few, it talks about in verse 4, the different pieces, a breast piece, which we'll get into, the ephod and a robe and a tunic and specially woven fabric, a turban and a sash. And they will make holy garments for Aaron and his brothers to serve me as priests. One thing to note, again, and you'll see all of this like gold, blue, purple, crimson, finely twisted linen. These are all things that we've seen already that is associated with the Holy of Holies or the holy place. This is what W. Ross Blackburn writes in his book, The God Who Makes Himself Known. And again, it helps sometimes to remember, like, one of the main themes of this is God making himself known. Like, in remembering that, especially as we think about the priesthood. But he says this, Aaron's garments were made of the same materials woven in the same manner as in the Holy of Holies, the specific place in the tabernacle where the Lord dwelt. The unmistakable association between Aaron's garments and the Holy of Holies suggests that Aaron so dressed symbolized the Lord's presence. That the word glory appears in the Exodus exclusively in relation to the Lord makes one exception, the statement that the priestly garments were made for glory and beauty all the more striking. That is to say, you know, he's the embodiment, somewhat of the embodiment of Yahweh before the people, that he represents the Lord's presence in and among the people when he's wearing this stuff. Peter N. says something similar. He says, this similarity between the priestly garments and the tabernacle is hardly accidental, and thus we catch a glimpse of the meaning of these garments. By being decked out as the tabernacle itself, the high priest in his service becomes the focus of God's presence for the people of God, a mini tabernacle, as it were. I'm not suggesting that we extend the analogy to say that the Spirit of God resides in the priest as he does the most holy place. Their garments rather reflect the holiness of the place in which they are called to minister. We might well ask, how else should we expect them to dress? Everyday clothes? Out of the question. And so he's going to be clothed in such a way that he can actually approach the holy, you know, the holy place. And that he's going to represent that. Whenever he walks out of the tabernacle, he's going to be wearing this stuff. And it's like he's imbuing and representing the holy presence of God. And so echoes the things that are in the center of the tabernacle. So let's see here. Then the last little part of this, what we had the onyx stones, right? And on the onyx stones were engraved the 12 tribes of Israel. So what did that mean? You remember what that meant?
Well, I mean, to me, just on first reading it, I was just thinking about how, like, you know, Aaron's remembering who he's going to God on behalf of. Mm-hmm. Like, that he is, like, the intercessor for that those groups of, you know, those mm-hmm. people. And so it would be important for him to remember who he is representing when he goes to God and when, you know, I don't know when he's meeting with him.
Yeah,
and, I think we'll get into this a little bit more too.
Yeah, this is the 12 tribes on his shoulder pads.
Yeah,
so he's wearing, it's like a yoke, you know, that's over his shoulders, that he's mm-hmm. wearing the weight of the 12 tribes of Israel on his shoulders, like he's carrying them on his shoulders. Which I mean, that's got to have tons of ties of being like, you know, upon his shoulders, that's a thing that echoes with me, right? That something, there's something from somewhere talking about, like, you know, bearing our iniquities on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that's kind of like this priestly language, that he bears their iniquities, or that he carries their name. This is the same word that's used for that in the second command, where it says that we usually say, don't, you know, what, don't use the Lord's name in vain, right? But the word there's the same. It's the to carry the name. Don't carry the name falsely. And that's, you know, for Israel, they carry the name of Yahweh. They're his representative to the nations. And to carry it in such a way that's not reflective of his character would be to bear it falsely. And just the same, Aaron is going to bear the names of the Israelites before Yahweh. In some way, he is fully representative of them. He's not just a, he is a representative, but it's almost like they are there in his, like in him and on him, that they are there in the middle of the presence. So anyways, you want to, what's the rest of this section here?
So you'll be reading 15 through 21.
Okay. 15 through 21. All right. So, and you will make a breastpiece of judgment, a work of a skilled craftsman, and you will make it like the work of the ephod, and you will make it of gold, blue and purple and crimson yarns, finely twisted linen. It will be square, doubled, a span its length, and a span its width. And you will fill it with this, with stone mounting, four rows of stones, a row of carnelian, topaz, and emerald is the first row, and the second row is a malachite, sapphire, and moonstone, and the third row is a jacinth, an agate, and an amethyst. And the fourth row is a turquoise, and an onyx, and a jasper. Their settings will be woven with gold. The stone will be according to the names of the Israelites, 12 according to their names, with seal engravings. Each according to its name, they will be for the 12 tribes.
So this to me is like, just like all the birthstones.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's, well, there's 12, you know, I guess, like kind of 12 months. But,
oh, yeah. Yeah. So maybe it really that's is.
That's just a happenstance, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wonder if that really is all the...
I don't think so.
No, because isn't diamond a birthstone or something? Yeah. Okay. Anyway... There's a lot of
they don't really have anything to
do. But there is a lot of like commonly known birthstones listed in here.
Sure.
So like, I mean, it's, I'm just thinking about all the different colors here because, you know, sometimes we don't necessarily think about what how these would be, you know, basically the rainbow here. We've got like, you know, ruby would be like a red. I'm not sure what, I can't remember what topaz is. Sapphire is blue. Amethyst is purple. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, emerald, green. So, like, yeah. I'm just thinking about all the different colors that we have
right.
sort of represented here. Right. Almost like, I don't know, I'm kind of picturing, like, a stained glass window kind of look.
Yeah.
Especially given what I think you're about to talk about.
Well, what do you think I'm about to talk about?
I think you're going to talk about radiating...
Oh,
light.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So yeah. Just imagine. Yeah. So you, he's got all these different jewels on him, that are all these different colors and whatnot. And so, and it's got all, again, it's the 12 tribes of Israel that he's bearing on his chest. Not only is he wearing their burden on his shoulders, but he's also wearing them over, you know, like on his heart. And they're each represented by a different stone. They each have their unique qualities, you know, and attributes. Hmm. And so for me, I feel like, you know, this is kind of, this is showing, you know, the diversity within the tribes. And maybe I'm extrapolating this a bit, but I think that, you know, whenever we get, when we do get into New Testament stuff and bringing in the Gentiles and whatnot, and it's like, you know, Paul is trying to overcome all of these different diverse aspects of all of these different people and how they're being brought in and they're being unified underneath Messiah. And so I just see like, you know, there's these differences between them, between all the tribes of Israel, and yet they're unified into one whole.
You know, I really am liking the analogy with like a stained glass window.
Yeah.
Because like those pieces are all like, jagged and different colors mm-hmm. and everything, but they fit together. And when they go, when they are unified, not when they are the same, exactly the same, but when they are unified and put together in one window, it's like a really beautiful.
Yeah. It's thing. It's a mosaic. Yeah. A mosaic is, you know, all these different pieces that have different attributes that, yeah, when they come together, they make a unified whole. That's like, oh, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. It's what it is. People do that with like one of our yearbooks at Hunter Middle School, we had it was like all the pictures, I guess, of all the students or whatever. And, it was put into like this mosaic, and then like there was a hawk, it made a hawk like on the picture, you know, we're the Hunter Hawks. Anyways, like it made you put it together and it's like, oh, like there's the hawk. Like we're all together. We make the hawk. It's kind of like that. You know what I mean? There's a famous jazz player. You know, I've seen a picture of it. It's like all these different pictures of him playing some instrument or whatever he's doing randomly. It's like they're all pictures of him. They're all random things, and then they come together to show like one great big picture of him that's representative of. Anyways,
of course, you know that I about digress. Some random jazz player.
It was a Tim Mackey thing. I remember going.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, because it's like a lot of the Bible is that way too. The Bible is a mosaic or a quilt. He will compare it to like an old quilt. You know, you've got all these different sections that come from different times, but they've been all unified into one whole to serve a purpose.
Yeah.
And anyways, so yeah, I see that, like, just that beautiful picture of like all these differences that are united and yet beautiful. And not only that, like whenever the priest would walk out, just picture in your mind's eye, you've got this dude that's covered with like crimson and, you know, what, like purple, blue, and then he's got stark white linen, like robes. And then on his body, he's got a gold chest piece with all these dazzling jewels on it. And then we haven't gotten to this part, but he's got a crown, a gold crown, on his forehead. This dude walks out of the tabernacle, and he is just glistening. He's just shimmering.
See, this is what I thought you were going to talk about.
He's just shimmering in the light.
Sort of like someone you may know from a certain book/movie franchise called Twilight.
What happens in Twilight?
What does happen in Twilight, Garrett? You've seen the movies.
I have seen the movie. I actually went to go see, I'm being punished for this right now, but this is not fair because I went to a midnight showing with you to New Moon.
Oh, and he even knows the
same. And I had an exam the next morning in my dynamics class.
Guys, you should have
seen. At 8 a.m., I had an exam in dynamics.
I didn't remember that part.
And I went to go see New Moon with you on a midnight showing on a Thursday night.
I do remember, though.
Back when they used to do that.
I do remember, though, that the news showed up to show like just how many people were there. And Garrett, when he saw the news cameras, he was like diving to like try to not be seen as like the only male in the movie theater.
So what's the line that Edward has? He's like, say it. Just say
out loud.
Out loud. Vampire. No, high priest. High priest. That's what he is.
Okay, well, anyways, we didn't even tell what happens.
What?
If you don't know what happens in Twilight, vampires, when they're in the sunlight,
they shimmer.
Sparkle.
Right. They don't die in they don't writhe in pain. They sparkle.
They sparkle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a new twist. So that's what's happening here.
What a dumb book. Anyways. So it's not a vampire. He's not a vampire. He's the high priest. but anyways, not Edward. Back to the story here.
Aaron,
he walks out. I mean, he's dazzling. He's got like, he's bedazzled. Isn't that what you call it when you've got the phone with all the jewels and stuff on it?
How do you bedazzled? Know that?
I don't know.
I mean, you're right. But okay, that's embarrassing.
So he's bedazzled, and like, so he just shimmers. I mean, he's like the embodiment of God's splendor. That's what we were just talking about. And so it's just really interesting. I mean, he shines with the glory of God. And I just want to offer that and just picture that, as opposed to this just being this long drawn out description of garments. Imagine what it would be like to see this person. He'd be walking around and you'd just be like, whoa, like this is something other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this is something beyond me. And I think that's the effect that it would have. And but then at the same time, it wasn't that, you know, the high priest was necessarily above everybody else. He was representative of everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so what it did was it reminded Israel not only of, like, their role, you know, like, of, you know, that the high priest was representing them before God, but it was to remind them to say, listen, this is what your job is before the nations. So if you aren't behaving, if you're not following my covenant and you're not taking care of people like we talked about in, you know, in Exodus chapters 21 through 23, if you're not doing those things, you're not shining among the people and you're not representing me. Whenever you follow my covenant, you're going to be bedazzled among the nations. I don't know, that maybe just sticks. But you're going to shine among the nations. This is what Paul's talking about. Whenever you shine like stars in the universe, it's like, whenever we're clothed with Christ, this is the way we shine, you know? Like, and that's what the high priest is, like, representative of. It's like, that's what they were supposed to be. That's where they were trying to go and where God's trying to edge them towards. That they're ultimately not going to be able to accomplish on their own. They're going to have a representative themselves. So, anyways, I just want to offer that. I think that that's a really interesting and cool way to look at it, is just like, oh, like, that he's... he's doing the thing. This is what humanity was meant to do. This is what Israel was meant to do to the nations, and then ultimately that the nations are meant to do to the world. And so, it's a small microcosm of what God's intentions are through the whole of the scriptures, and what he's trying to do with everybody. You have any other thoughts on this section?
I don't think so.
Okay. Right. So where do we pick up?
I'm gonna pick up in 22.
Okay, 22.
For the breastpiece, make braided chains of pure gold, like a rope. Make two gold rings for it and fasten them to two corners of the breastpiece. Fasten the two gold chains to the rings at the corners of the breastpiece and at the other ends of the chains to the two settings, attaching them to the shoulder pieces of the ephod at the front. Make two gold rings and attach them to the other two corners of the breastpiece on the inside edge next to the ephod. Make two more gold rings and attach them to the bottom of the shoulder pieces on the front of the ephod, close to the seam just above the waistband of the ephod. The rings of the breastpiece are to be tied to the rings of the ephod with blue cord, connecting it to the waistband so that the breastpiece will not swing out from the ephod. Whenever Aaron enters the holy place, he will bear the names of the sons of Israel over his heart on the breastpiece of decision, as a continuing memorial before the Lord. Also put the Urim and the Thummim in the breastpiece, so they may be over Aaron's heart whenever he enters the presence of the Lord. Thus Aaron will always bear the means of making decisions for the Israelites over his heart before the Lord.
Okay. So, again, we continue to get this description of... you know, this breastpiece, this is the piece that the jewels are in, and now this one's like, it's kind of describing how it seems like it's like really tight on his body. Yeah. You know, like you got these chains that are going around, all these gold chains. Again, this bedazzlement.
I was thinking Aaron. More like gangster.
What? Oh, okay. Well, yeah. You can look bedazzling at that. And well, like it's kind of like this bulletproof like vest. No, it's a breastplate. I mean, you think of breastplate as like armor, right?
Yeah,
usually, I mean, that's like what Paul and, you know.
I wish y'all could see some of Garrett's.
Sorry, we need a video of this somehow.
I know.
But like Ephesians chapter 6, like the breastplate, you know, what is it? Is it breastplate of righteousness or something?
I think so.
You know, the breastplate of righteousness, which comes from Isaiah, I think. Where it's like God's armor, it's God's armor, and how he the way that he fights his battles is through right relationship. Anyways, it's not his armor is unique and it's different. The armor that God wears and how he deals with his enemies is different than the way that we deal with our enemies. Anyways, I just say that breastplate's usually associated with armor. And yet here this is like, this is representative of the people. Mm-hmm. And it's like this, it's a holy garment. It has this feeling of like being tight around his chest, you know, and really in there, because it's like, it's going to be close to his heart, right? Yeah. It's going to be like over his heart. They're continually going to be on the, I think the heart was primarily the place of thinking too. It's not so much the head, but the heart is the place where you do your thinking. And so it's like his mind is going to be, you know, continually on them as he represents them to God.
Yeah, and I was kind of getting at this earlier when we first mentioned how like the names are of the 12 tribes of Israel are on the like shoulder pieces. Mm-hmm. It's like, again, they're here and what stuck out to me the most in this section was that like making sure that this breast piece doesn't like swing out from his body, that it mm-hmm. is close to, and it is close to his heart. And then just keeping in mind with like, that these people will be over Aaron's heart when he enters the presence of the Lord, and keeping in mind that he's going to be like making decisions for the Israelites and like in discussing things about the Israelites to the Lord. And so I just think that it's a lot of symbolism there of like just needing to be mindful of, I mean, like this is a big burden, mm-hmm. I would think. I mean, well, a big responsibility.
It would be terrifying.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's just be real about it. Like, you've been told, let's say some high priest after Aaron, you've been told that, listen, dude, when this started, day one, Aaron's sons died when they walked in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and every time you're wearing this, like, I really hope I've done it all. Like, I hope I've gotten it all right. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, you imagine, it's got to be terrifying going into this place. But it also is a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, what to think about Zechariah in Luke chapter 1. Whenever he's in the holy place lighting incense and stuff, and an angel of the Lord appears before him, and he falls down like, I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You would, like, which is what happens with everybody that comes into contact with that. And I think it would be really terrifying, you know, that you're like, I really hope I get this all right. Well, I mean, it's very similar to, like, I've talked about this before. I work a lot in nuclear plants, and when we go into radiation controlled areas, you know, you got to suit up right sometimes if there's contamination and stuff, and you're like, okay, I really hope I've got all this on here right. You know, like, there's a huge burden with that. Like, I really hope I did it right, so, you know, I don't, like, I guess consume
a lot of radiation
contaminants and then die from. Anyways, so anyway, I kind of picture that as a part of it too. You're like going into the hot spot of God's glory and strapping up for it. But yeah, bearing their iniquities, bearing them and having them before your heart and before the Lord has got to be a huge burden. Yeah. It's got to feel that way. One thing, this is what Walter Brueggemann says about the ephod. He says, in its intention, the ephod serves to bring Israel with all its generations gathered in a moment into the holy presence of God. So it represents all the tribes of Israel, but not even just for this moment. Like, for all moments, for every generation of Israelites. And that would be the way they would hold the Passover. They would always say, we were slaves in Egypt, and God came and got us. You know, and he came and delivered us. They would all unite and say that thing happened to us. At every Passover meal, you do that. And so it's like this unifying moment. And then the Urim and the Thummim, these are some, nobody really knows what these are. But for whatever they are, they're for making judgments and discerning God's will whenever you're in the holy place. And so that's what his role is going to end up being. He's meeting with God. You know, remember, he's going in to meet with God. That's what this whole purpose is. And God wants to be close to his people. And so he's going to them saying, hey, you know, like, we're trying to figure out what we should do about this. We just want to discern your will or whatever. And so that's what the Urim and the Thummim are for. Okay, so where do I pick up here?
31 through the end.
All right, here we go. And you will make the robe of the ephod totally of blue yarn, and you will open for it his head, or in the opening for his head will be in the middle of it. Its opening will have an edge all round, the work of a weaver. It will be like the opening of a sturdy garment for it so that it will not be torn. And you will make on its hems pomegranates of blue and purple and crimson yarns on its hem all around in bells of gold in the midst of them all around. A bell, a gold bell and a pomegranate, a gold bell and a pomegranate on the hem of the robe all around. And it will be on Aaron for serving, and its sound will be heard at his coming into the sanctuary before Yahweh as his going out, so that he will not die. And you will make a pure gold rosette, and you will engrave on it with the seal engravings a holy object for Yahweh. And you will place it on a blue cord, and it will be on the turban, at the front of the turban it will be, and it will be on the forehead of Aaron, and Aaron will bear the guilt of the holy objects that the Israelites will consecrate for all their holy gifts, and it will be on his forehead continually for acceptance for them before Yahweh. And you will weave the tunic of fine linen, and you will make a turban of fine linen, and you will make a sash, the work of an embroiderer. And for the sons of Aaron you will make tunics, and you will make them sashes and headdresses. You will make them for glory and for splendor. And you will clothe them, Aaron and your brother and his sons with him, and you will anoint them and ordain them and consecrate them, and they will serve as priests for me and make for them undergarments of linen to cover naked flesh, and they will be from loins to thigh. And they will be on Aaron and his sons whenever they come into the tent of meeting or the tent of assembly, for when they approach the altar to serve in the sanctuary, so that they will not bear guilt and die. It is a lasting statute for him and for his offspring after him.
So a lot of this stuff feels very similar to what we've already read in terms of like blue, purple, scarlet, you know,
right,
gold, whatever. But the new thing to me is the bells.
Yeah.
Like, we have to address the bells.
So, I mean, and here's the thing, like, and I finally caught, like, I guess whenever I first read this, I thought it was a weird repetition, a gold bell and a pomegranate, a gold bell and a pomegranate. It's showing how it alternates. on the hymn. And the, it's basically like he's got a gold bell and a fruit. A gold bell and a fruit. And, like, when have I seen pomegranate before? It was at the tree that's in the holy place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like, I think it was pomegranates that it talked about. So I'm like, is he just like a walking tree?
Mm.
Like, is he a walking tree? And so he's got like this fruit that hangs off of him, you know, and that like goes around. And he's like this walking tree of life. I don't know. It's weird. But I think that that's interesting. But then the bells, it's like it announces his presence. Yeah. And it's like, here I am. Right? Like, this is where I am. And for me, so it like announces him before he goes in. It's like, hey, by the way, just knocking on the door. Like, yeah. Hey, I'm coming in.
It's like you wouldn't just walk into some people do, but yeah. You usually don't walk into somebody's house without ringing the doorbell or knocking.
Right.
And so like this to me is kind of symbolizing that, or else, you know, like if you walk into a random person's house without ringing the doorbell, you really might die.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You can't just walk
in. One does not boldly walk into the presence of Yahweh.
Right.
Yeah. And it's just, it's like this announcement. But for me, like, the more I thought about it, I was just thinking about this last night. And I was like, yeah, the more I thought about it, I was like, I feel like this is an answer. And this may just be taking it too far. But I feel like this is an answer to the, whenever you come, you enter Genesis chapter 3 and Adam eats of the fruit. And he says, he hears the sound of God, and he says, where are you?
Mm.
Right? It just seems like the answer to, like, here I am.
Mm.
You know, which is what Moses said whenever he approached the burning, you know, like, yeah. It was like, Moses. And he's like, it's me, you know, like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Or, like, Samuel, whenever he just hears his name, and he's like, hey, here I am. It feels like that here I am statement, just, like, in his clothes. I don't know. It's just kind of like this announcement, even as he goes around the camp, it's like announcing his presence, but at the same time, like, he wasn't to be worshipped.
Right.
You know, he wasn't to be worshipped. It was just like this walking representation of, like, here, you know, this is the person that represents us before God. He even, like, he is us. He's not he's not higher than us. He is us, you know? And so, I don't know. You just kind of get that feeling of, like, this is the... Or even whenever he's in the tabernacle, there's, like, we know he's not dead because I can hear the bells moving.
Yeah.
If we hear the bells stop moving, we probably need to start, you know, evacuation plan, you know, two or whatever, to like tie, how do we get a rope on his leg without going in? The whole thing that happens in the Nadab and Abihu, like, how do we get him out? But yeah, it's like, Nadab and Abihu's bells stopped ringing. How did they, like, otherwise, how did they know that they died? Maybe that was some aspect of it. I don't know.
Something else I want to remind us all of is that a few chapters ago, God was talking about making everyone like a royal priesthood,
mm-hmm.
of basically everyone becoming like a priest. And we didn't really have a full grasp then, and I guess we still don't now. We didn't really necessarily know what that would look like, but now that, like, we're talking about what they're wearing and how God is viewing them, of, you know, trying to lift them up, elevate them to be in his presence. I mean, like, this is ultimately how God sees all of us,
mm-hmm.
because of Jesus.
Right, yeah.
And so it's just like, I don't know, when you just really try to put everything together of like, no, I'm supposed to, like, because of Jesus, I'm part of a royal priesthood and I'm, you know, adorned in this kind of glory.
Mm-hmm.
And like what you were talking about shining, I mean, mm-hmm. that's our responsibility too. And we were talking too about a burden, of it being a burden. And that is, it is a lot for us to carry, mm-hmm. but like we have God.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's just like, I don't know. When I think about how this is ultimately meant for me too, it kind of changes everything.
Yeah.
And it's not just like, oh, well, Aaron was, you know, like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. In some sense, you know, Jesus is our great high priest, and that he's, you know, he's the one that on his forehead bears the name Holy, Belonging to Yahweh. But what Paul would say is like, you're in Messiah.
Yeah.
And so because you're in Messiah, you're holy, belonging to Yahweh.
Yeah.
And so like it's a, and that's what like Peter's trying to get through too. Like that's where that comes from, is that Peter picks up that mantle and says, that was, you know, he's telling these Christians like, you're the true Israel, mm-hmm. you know, you're carrying that mantle of that you're the holy priesthood. And you know, it didn't like die, and that, you know, God was like, I'm going to scrap the whole Israel project. No, he fulfilled the Israel project and engrafted these Gentiles that Peter's talking about and saying, no, y'all are the holy priesthood. On your forehead is this, you know, is this holy, belonging to Yahweh. And like, that's the way, like, we've got to remember that that's kind of like what we bear. It comes up in Revelation too, of like that those that are, you know, that are part of God's kingdom, they're the ones on their forehead bear, instead of the mark of the beast, we bear the mark of Yahweh.
Yeah.
That it says, you know, when we go to our brothers and our sisters, or, you know, whenever we go to, you know, to people that we work with, if we're not remembering, like, it's almost like you wish you almost had that on your forehead all the time, so you could remember to this is who I represent.
Yeah.
Because of Messiah, because Jesus was the great high priest that Aaron never could be, that he would fail this coming out the gate.
Mm-hmm.
But because Jesus was able to fulfill that and be a high priest greater than Aaron, in what would the Hebrews would say, the order of Melchizedek, that he is the one that truly bears the name of Yahweh. And through him, because we are in Messiah, on our foreheads is written, Holy, Belonging to Yahweh.